Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. In our top story this week, Highliner Foods is seeking a refund of over $41 million from the U.S. government after tariffs imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act were ruled unlawful. The Canadian seafood giant reported a 9% drop in Q1 earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization to $29.3 million. The drop in EBITDA was caused by higher raw material costs, including tariffs on select species, elevated promotional activity, unfavorable product mix, and supply chain challenges due to limited availability of supply, particularly in the company's key whitefish species, the company said.
But with the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in February of this year, which concluded that the tariffs imposed by U.S. President Donald Trump under the IEEPA were unlawful, Highliner is hoping to recover some of the tariffs collected. In fact, it's looking at a whopping $41.3 million, which it said it paid in related tariffs during that period. Much of that was related to raw material imported from China, which is currently subject to a 45% reciprocal tariff until November 10, 2026, unless President Trump decides otherwise. The company has already started filing refund claims under the phase administration process launched last month by US CBP. The company said that the potential refund could be significant. However, recovery of tariffs is not a certainty. So if anything is recovered, it would be reflected in that quarter's earnings report.
Moving along, we're globetrotting today as we talk about some of the big stories to break in seafood this week. And our next stop is the UK, where fish and chip shops are freaking out because cod supplies are getting squeezed from basically every direction imaginable. This story is kind of wild because it's not just one problem. It's quotas, it's sanctions, inflation, supply chain chaos, and changing trade flows. The seafood bingo card is basically full here.
Undercurrent reported this week that so far, Icelandic supply has held strong as the UK outbids the Spanish and US markets in 2026. Although they are paying through the nose at $17.89 per kilogram in February, while US buyers paid $15.24 per kilogram. The big picture, though, is that UK imports of frozen cod fillets have dropped sharply in 2026, with just 6,516 metric tons arriving in the UK in the first 2 months of the year, compared with over 9,155 tons last year.
The supply of Icelandic, Norwegian, and Faroese cod has become more important to the fish and chip industry since the EU and Norway sanctioned Russian seafood companies Naribo Holding and Merman Seafood last spring over alleged state-sponsored espionage in European waters. The UK did not sanction the companies, but Russian ships are banned from docking in British and European ports, cutting off the direct supply route. Some Russian cod is now redirected through China to the UK, but suffers a loss in quality on the way because it must be double frozen.
Check out the show notes to read the full story. And now joining us to talk about what's going on in another whitefish market at the moment is Undercurrent Editor-in-Chief Tom Seaman. So Tom, what's going on with pollock at the moment?
Yeah, well, this was definitely the big story from the Seafood Expo Global show in Barcelona, which seems like a long way away, but it was only in late April. And I don't think the dynamics in the market have particularly moved since from speaking to sources. So, yeah, going into the show, pollock was definitely a big talking point. The pollock prices are rising quite rapidly, and it's a very interesting time into the market. So going into the show, the Russian and US single frozen PBO pollock blocks were effectively sold out. No kind of additional volume available from A season. And that was exacerbated by US A season production running about 17.5% down. So they were below even the previous year. And then that left Chinese double frozen blocks as the only significant volume going into the show, which created a very interesting dynamic, I would say. Just before the show, we issued our April price assessment for Chinese, Russian, and US pollock blocks, which was kind of, it's just the way this is timed. We do it on the third Thursday of each month. So it would have been interesting to have done it during the show, but it's just the timing of the assessment. That assessment on April 16th took the Chinese double frozen pricing to a new all-time high. And then when you factor in the freight the cold storage, and then the 13.7% duty, which the EU applies on top of any Russian origin material. The price for the Chinese product was above the levels agreed in a season for Russian and US, which is an extremely unusual situation because usually the single frozen trades at a higher level and kind of sets the price. So, and that level, the Chinese pricing is kind of at, if you take a like for like, apples to apples duty paid price, is above the highest price we've ever recorded for a single frozen pollock, which was at the end of 2022 during COVID. So at the show, I'd say the atmosphere was pretty intense in the sector. Before the show, buyers were hoping that the pricing would be kind of somewhat reasonable. But then I think during the show, that hope evaporated. And each day I was hearing pricing moving up by $100 per metric ton, it seemed. And I'd say, by the ending of the show, I'd heard of, spot deals happening, which were $200 to $300 above our April assessment. So like, even in that space of a week, it was revealed that pricing had moved up. This is obviously for very small volumes because most of the volumes were sold out. So moving into May, and this is still the current situation.
The timing of the show is like right before China's May Day holiday, right? Like that, so that timing's got to factor into some.
So I went off on holiday for that, which has then kind of delayed certainly trade in the H&G market a bit. And then actually this week, Russia was on a holiday, which was the a holiday to celebrate the end of World War II. So sort of Russia's been off. So there's been a little bit of a slow trade in the H&G market because of the Chinese holiday and then also because of the Russian holiday. So that H&G is obviously going into the double frozen blocks, and then and the H&G price is at an all-time high. Like we've never, we keep using this chart in stories, and the current price is like, $800 above the previous high price or something. It's kind of a crazy image to use, but you've got to subscribe to a pro account to get access to that. So hope you go and do that. But it's a really interesting time in the market, and it's going to see the position we're at now is that usually around this time, early May, there would be B season contracts would have been agreed because this all happens in advance. So the B season starts for Russia. It technically starts tomorrow on 8 May the 15th, but no one will be out fishing until late May, early June, because all the vessels are in the shipyards being kind of, repaired and stuff. So from what I understand, no one will really be going out fishing properly until early June. The US B season starts in June too. So yeah, there's a little bit of a, there would normally be contracts agreed before that with the big European and US customers too. But obviously Europe's the biggest market for the pollock fillet blocks. And that isn't happening at the minute. Obviously the buyers would love for there to be contracts, but the dynamic in the market is very much with the sellers. And so they're holding off and, holding the line on the prices that they want, which, will be all-time highs, and basically saying to the buyers, take it or leave it, I think is kind of the way it's working. And we're going to move well above the previous peak for pricing, which was at the end of 2022 from the way things are going. And then, people in the pollock market will know that 2023, the prices basically tanked. The prices were diving all through 2023. And I think bottomed out midway through 2024. But what people generally feel like is that, now is a very different time now. It's kind of a structurally different time in the market. In at that point, buyers were overstocked, and then demand softened because you had this situation where, everybody was stocking up on retail products because of the COVID lockdowns, and then that started to release. People started to go out again, eat in restaurants. Retail demand dropped, and obviously these frozen supply chains mean that stock gets built up, and so the market corrected down very sharply. The one thing that people seem to be wary of is obviously the price for the finished products in the retail in Europe, particularly in Germany. That's the biggest market for fish fingers and or fish sticks, as you say in the US, and other products like that. And the Germans are quite, it's fair to say, cost conscious with food. So there's a 3 euro kind of like ceiling, which people, I'm not sure the price has ever been over 3 euros before. Someone might correct me on that. But yeah, there's the way the finished product price is moving, it could definitely get close to 3 euros, if not go beyond it. People seem to think it will stay below it. But that new price comes in the stores on July the 1st. And then it'll be interesting to see what happens with the demand and whether the demand falls. But then you've got these kind of structural things in the market, like increased US demand, which obviously Lauren will know more about, but the US market is taking much more because of these bans on Russian products. You've got the USDA bids, which you've also covered, Amanda. taking up much more volume. You covered a story recently about Captain D's using pollock again, and so there's the increased QSR demand in the US too. And then in Europe, you've got the pool of potential Russian vessels is reducing because the EU is not giving licenses to new Russian vessels, and the Russians keep building new vessels. So these new vessels come in, they replace a vessel with an EU license, and it's a real problem that now the EU industry is really trying to kind of get the commission to resolve this, or let some of the new Russian vessels have licenses. But obviously politically it's difficult because it seems like they're pandering to Russia. And then you had sanctions on this Naribo company last year in Europe, and they're a big pollock producer, so that took maybe 10,000, 12,000 tons out of the supply for the European market. And so none of these factors existed in 2023 when the price previously tanked. So I guess you'd generally say that the floor, the potential floor, is much higher than it was then. So yeah, we'll be doing my next price assessment on these pollock fillet blocks is next Thursday. So yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to be eagerly awaiting that. It's such an exciting topic to cover, but that will be coming out next Thursday. So I'll be kind of checking in more with sources, from really tomorrow and next week, and finding out, where people are at for that. So that'll be published next Thursday.
Yeah, Lauren and I, we actually are going to talk about this a little bit later in the show about US retail, but yep, prices for pollock in April, they went up 11% year on year to $5.12 a pound. Shoppers, when you look at the top five frozen species, I mean, pollock was still one of the top ones for US retail, but dollar sales decreased 6.8% and pounds sold was down 16%.
Yeah, that's interesting. It does show the sort of the price sensitivity of it as a product, and it's being caused, I guess, by the US having less available, product available because of the bans on the Russian product, and Russia and the US are the main producers, so there's only US volume available for that market. But what you're seeing in the US wholesale pricing, Lauren, is that it's moved up a bit, right? But I didn't actually
Yeah, I
check where
mean,
you.
you basically hit on all the factors that we're seeing, leading into the 2026 bee season. You kind of have to take a look at how the year started off because we're in a much tighter position than a lot of people expected maybe 6 or 8 months ago. A big part of that, like you mentioned, USDA program kind of cleared out any remaining 2025 bee season inventory. So that tightened up replacement availability pretty quickly. At the same time, the industry was kind of dealing with biological challenges that was manifesting in smaller fish, uneven catches, storms, weaker fillet yields. And then on top of that, some of the 2025 quota was left uncaught. So we were in a really tight position starting off. So heading into the 2026 bee season negotiations, everything is still pretty firm. Inventories are tight. Sellers are holding the advantage. They've got a little bit more leverage right now, like you mentioned, Tom, and prices are trending higher into 2026 bee season, but we're still seeing those prices solidified as we inch closer to the start in June. So, not everybody's set yet, but we'll be reporting new prices as things are solidified.
Now, Tom, since we have you on here, and we didn't get to talk to you the other week after Barcelona, but one of the big stories to break from Barcelona involved, seafood giant Cook.
Yeah, so I managed to get an interview with Glenn Cook, which was great because we've not done one in person for quite some time. I think, yeah, Jason Hoffman did the last one in Canada maybe a year ago or longer. But yeah, it was really great to, to meet with Glenn in person and get an insight on what they're thinking with their, large acquisition in Europe, which they're close to closing. It's still not closed, which is for Avramar, which is one of the largest bass and bream producers based in Spain. It's also got a big operation in Greece. There was a bit of a tussle Cook had to acquire the company with Aqua Bridge. It's kind of a Middle Eastern investment company that was seemed to be in the box seat. And then, the whole situation in the Middle East seemed to then be the kind of nail in the coffin of their, attempt to acquire it. And Cook has emerged as the kind of winning party in this process. But he was telling me about that deal, that a big part of the rationale for it, which I thought was very interesting, is the kind of, growing demand in the US market for bass and bream. And part of that is being driven by the general shortage of, whitefish. You mentioned higher pricing, and you mentioned the pollock pricing there. It's kind of just a lot of prices are moving up, and the reason for that is that supply on lots of stuff is short. Atlantic cod, Pacific cod, pollock too, and that's kind of part of the rationale of this deal. And then also, which was, you know, that was the main part of the interview, was really to kind of actually get him to talk about that. And he said that when the acquisition closes, they'll have around 60,000 tons of bass and bream. In fact, no, 80,000. I think Avramar is 60,000, and Cook's currently doing about 20. So it's a very kind of interesting move from them to become one of the biggest players in this sector. There's maybe one or two Turkish companies that could be bigger, but yeah, they'll certainly be up there when this deal does close. But then I spoke to him also about their M&A aspirations in salmon, because obviously they're the largest producer in North America. They're also in Chile. They're in Australia, and they're also in Scotland too. So they're, you know, they're present in, you know, a lot of the big production regions, but they're not present in Norway. And yeah, he actually kind of spoke openly about their acquisitive intentions in Norway, but said that they're very interested in acquiring a company in Norway, which is the world's biggest salmon producing country, but they need to do something big. So he was talking about, you know, something around the 25,000 ton mark, because the smaller companies, it's very hard for them to be able to compete with, you know, the big Norwegians, because they can pick up those smaller companies and they've got, you know, synergies with them, so they can afford to pay a higher price. But, you know, Cook needs to do something more impactful, which, you know, who knows? There might be something coming on that this year, because there is, you know, there's several Norwegian companies kind of in play. You know, one in particular called Massival, which is kind of openly up for sale, and it's you know, somewhere in the range of 20 to 30,000 tons in production. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But it was very interesting to, you know, to hear him talk about that. And, you know, Cook's definitely not done when it comes to M&A, and it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, where that company is in a year, 5 years, 10 years time, because I think, you know, the family business, and he's generating a huge amount of, you know, profit from the salmon business that they have, you know, salmon being so strong, and they can use that to invest in more, you know, salmon farms, but also other sectors, and building up the company.
Thanks, Tom. Now, moving along, Indian seafood giant Captain Fresh has announced it will launch a new domestic retail arm in partnership with Alana Group, taking a 49% stake in the newly minted Indian Retail Alliance. Under Captain Fresh's retail brand, ChopServe, the venture aims to open 4,000 stores in India across standalone shops, shop-in-shop outlets, and food service channels. The new entity aims to, and I quote, organize India's fragmented protein industry. And I didn't know this, but the Indian market now comprises less than 10% of Captain Fresh's revenue. The company's growth has been driven by a string of international acquisitions, including Sensi, Coral, and FreeMe. But it continues to operate in nearly every coastal state of India, supplying close to 2,500 businesses.
Alana is India's largest exporter of branded processed food products with a 160-year heritage in the country, and hopes to inspire trust in the Indian Retail Alliance. Alana is best known for its chicken processing and will hold the other 51% of the Indian Retail Alliance. The venture is another step in Captain Fresh's ambition to generate $1 billion in annual revenue.
Moving over to the US, a bipartisan group of 20 US lawmakers, led by Representatives Clay Higgins, a Louisiana Republican, and Troy Carter, a Louisiana Democrat, is urging the Trump administration to launch a sweeping federal investigation into alleged unfair trade practices tied to imported seafood. They've requested a broad Section 301 investigation into harmful practices affecting the US seafood sector in a three-page letter sent earlier this week to US Trade Representative Jamison Greer.
The lawmakers noted that the USTR has historically focused on fisheries subsidies and illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. But they say a probe should be conducted to examine a broad range of issues across the seafood supply chain, and that includes alleged false labeling, use of branded antibiotics and fungicides in aquaculture production, government subsidies, labor abuses, environmental concerns, and excess production capacity in competing seafood exporting countries, according to the lawmakers. Higgins and Carter argue that a narrow Section 301 investigation would bypass a unique opportunity to meaningfully address the full range of market distorting practices that suppress prices, distort markets, and displace American seafood harvesting and processing.
Argentina, Canada, Chile, China, Ecuador, India, Indonesia, the list goes on. Norway, Spain, I'm not going to name them all, but those are just a few of them specifically highlighted in the letter, although the lawmakers note that, you know, the list is not limited to those countries. But really important to note here is that the letter comes nearly 2 months after the USTR announced the initiation of Section 301 investigations into alleged unfair trade practices in 16 countries, including several major seafood producing nations, and a separate investigation of 60 countries on accusations of producing goods with forced labor. The probes under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974 give the administration firmer ground to advance Trump's tariff agenda after duties previously imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act were shot down by the U.S. Supreme Court. Bob Dahan, Vice President and General Counsel of U.S. Seafood Trade Group National Fisheries Institute, told Undercurrent last month at Seafood Expo Global in Barcelona, Spain, that the investigations are almost certain to generate traffic that will restore the president's negotiating leverage.
But Dahan also noted that previous Section 301 actions had little to do with seafood, and similarly, the current investigations are also not seafood-focused. However, Higgins and Carter are urging for seafood-specific Section 301 investigations in this case. In the letter, Higgins and Carter argue that a seafood-specific Section 301 investigation would give the administration leverage to, quote, level the playing field for domestic harvesters and processors while addressing longstanding concerns about imported seafood entering the U.S. market under weaker production and labor standards.
We'll be keeping a close eye on Section 301 investigation developments, so be sure to check Undercurrent Daily. Now onto some fun stuff. Another restaurant chain has entered the all-you-can-eat arena, Applebee's, and at a significantly lower price than Red Lobster's current endless shrimp promotion.
So how much lower are we talking? Because the deal at Red Lobster was what, $24.99?
Correct. Applebee's is coming in swinging at $15.99. So that's like the price that drove Red Lobster to its ultimate bankruptcy, you know, amongst other things. And then they had to raise the price to $20 and then $25. So Applebee's is sticking with it at the $15.99. I think they did that last year too. Of course, the deals are very different. Red Lobster, you can get three different types of shrimp to choose from. Applebee's is offering, you know, all you can eat boneless wings, riblets, and double crunch shrimp. You can mix and match too, but it's a great value. And that's kind of what it's coming down to for shoppers. But I've never seen them, you know, obviously there's called all you can eat and the one is called endless shrimp, but I've never seen them going on at the same time.
Right. We'll have to take our next lunch break there and check it out. So this leads us to our final story. An early Easter put a damper on seafood retail sales in April, according to the latest seafood retail report from 210 Analytics. But the Easter calendar shakeup is not the only factor that played into April's retail figures. Inflation reared its ugly head again, and as a result, fresh and frozen seafood categories continue to struggle, with shrimp taking a bigger hit in pound sales than other species. Seafood prices rose across all temperature zones, according to RoRank. The frozen seafood category saw a double-digit price increase of 14.4% year-on-year to $8.14 per pound. Frozen shrimp saw a whopping 20.2% year-over-year price increase to $9.11 per pound. Frozen crab also saw significant price increases with the average price of $13.58 per pound, and that's up 11.2% year-over-year. Frozen pollock prices averaged $5.12 per pound, an 11% year-over-year increase.
On the fresh side, seafood prices increased 4.6% year-over-year to $9.99 per pound. Fresh cod saw the biggest change, up 12.9% to $11.48 per pound. But fresh shrimp also saw a double-digit increase. That was up 11% to $9.33 per pound. And then fresh salmon saw a modest 3.6% increase to $11.73 per pound. Shrimp really saw the impact of that price increase. Shrimp, you know, the second most popular fresh seafood item at retail, saw its sales drop 10.3% to 69.5 million last month, while pounds sold also decreased 19.2% year over year. In the frozen category, shrimp continued to dominate April sales, representing nearly half of all frozen seafood sales at 318.4 million. However, as in the fresh category, frozen pounds sold also fell by double digits, down 17.6% year over year.
But that does it for us this week. As always, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you back here next week.
Bye-bye.